on a trip to the moon. A Johnny King special on City Talk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to A Trip to the Moon, our Johnny King special here on City Talk 105.9. My name's Matthew Jones and this is the first of our two shows looking back at the career of Tranmere's greatest ever manager. He's having a meal in his honour this week at Port Sunlight's Hume Hall. It's sold out and his former winger, Pat Nevin, will be a guest speaker. That meal is being laid on by the former Players Foundation as well as the Tranmere Rovers Supporters Trust, who are trying to raise funds for a Johnny King statue that will stand outside Prenton Park. I'm joined in the studio by Ray Mathias, Chris Malkin and Eddie Bishop, and we'll be hearing shortly from Ian Muir and John Aldridge on the phone. But firstly, here's a little taster of what Johnny King was all about.
It's like the 10 green bottles when you're a kid, you know, 10 green bottles hanging on the wall, 10 green bottles hanging on the wall. And if one green bottle should accidentally fall, there'll be 9 green bottles hanging on the wall. And then one green bottle hanging on the wall, one green bottle hanging on the wall. And if that green bottle should accidentally fall, we'll be in the Premier League after all.
And that is Johnny King all over, isn't it, Ray?
It's absolutely true to every little thing what he's saying there, but tremendous fella. Very superstitious guy. I remember when we used to play away from home and sitting on the bus going up to the away ground where we were just going to play, and he'd stick this record on, you know, and it was called the Rhinestone Cowboy. So all the lads used to get at the back of the coach, you know, with a whip in the hand and start singing along with this record as we got there, you know. But, you know, it was John, what he was, he was superstitious. He used to play every game away from home, and it proved right because we won promotion that season.
What was Johnny the man like, Eddie?
Well, you've just played that clip then of him singing, and that brought back memories to me instantly of when we were down at the Old Valley Road training ground, and we used to train down there. And the lads had used to, he'd come in for training of a morning, have a bite to eat or something before we started, and a cup of tea. And you'd always hear the gaffer coming out of his office singing or whistling and happy as anything, singing all Frank Sinatra tunes or something like that. And sometimes even when you're sitting there and you're feeling a little bit fed up, you know, for Christ's sake, gaffer, give it a rest, will you? But that's just the way it was. He just always seemed happy. And as the day went on, you got on the training field, it lifted your mood then, and it made it a happy camp.
Chris?
Yeah, no, I agree with that totally. He was, you know, he always made everyone feel really happy. But in terms of these songs like the Rhinestone Cowboy, he changed that as the few years went on, because we always used to approach the away games, you know, with the last 200 or 300 yards, he used to put a Rocky theme on. You know, he'd have us so revved up, getting ready to go off the bus. And as you got off the bus, he'd give you a pat on the back. You know what I mean? So, you know, just to, you know, get you going. And that the 10 green bottles, I remember that because it was there were 10 games to go, and we had to really stay unbeaten to get into the playoffs. So each game was, you know, like one green bottle. And actually, you know, he said, right, it's a mini league, and we've got 10 games to go, and we actually went unbeaten that year. The last 10 games of the season to get into the playoffs. Unfortunately, as we normally did, we didn't quite get through to to what was then the old First Division.
Well, just some stats about Johnny. He signed for Tranmere because he played as a player, first of all, in 1960 from Bournemouth, and made 262 appearances before leaving in 1967. And then what a lot of people forget when they talk about Johnny is he actually had two spells in charge. In his first, appointed in April 1975, won a promotion in his first full season in charge, didn't he, Ray? And I believe you must have been at the club at that time.
Yes, it was, yeah. It was 75-76 season, and I remember the time when he was deciding who was going to be his captain, and he pulled myself in, a fellow called Tommy Young, and a fellow called Barry Mitchell, who a couple of years previous to that was wanted by Liverpool Football Club, and only for a back injury, it didn't happen. But, you know, got the three of us in, had a good chat with us, and he said to Barry Mitchell, he said, I'd make you captain, but I'll leave it this time. And Tommy Young was another Scotsman. He said, I was thinking of making you captain. He says, but I'm not. He said, I'm going to make Ray captain. He says, I think he's got all the attributes to be a good captain. and lead the team on the park, and he did that, you know, and it didn't prove wrong because we won promotion that year, and plus the fact he'd got a bit of stick off me actually because he was my neighbour across the road for 27 years, so it was important he'd done something for the neighbourhood. But that's John, you know. But he got in, he got people in. If he wanted to make a change in the team, he'd get them in his office, have a chat with them. And also he had a chat with us about his skipper, you know, and he's so thorough in everything what he did.
Well, you must know John on three different points, really, because you played with him, played under him, and then you were on his backroom staff as well.
Yeah, I played with John. Gave me a lot of advice. I was a young lad getting into the team then, you know, so it was a... But I can assure you, Johnny King was probably a 5'8" and jumped 6'6" because he was absolutely magnificent. He had a magnificent spring. And he used to tell a tale where when he was a kid, he was going along an avenue where he lived and there was loads of trees. And what he used to do was run along the avenue and jump up and try and head every leaf on the tree or head one of the, you know, the branches. And that's how he got his spring in. But absolutely fantastic, you know, from a... You know, as a player and with steel and grit for such a small player as well, so athleticism, you know, and brilliant and very tenacious. There's nobody harder than him, I can assure you.
We look at some more of Johnny's stats, and in charge for 670 games in total at Tranmere, a win ratio of 39%, 261 games he won of them. But it was the success in his second spell in charge which really made him what he is at Tranmere, wasn't it, Eddie?
Yeah, he came back to the club in 1987, it was, something like that. Peter Johnson took over the club. And if you go back to that was it the last game against Exeter when they needed to stay up?
Yeah.
I always remember him saying that people were... It was a big crowd that day. I wasn't at the club at the time. I remember him telling me afterwards, but he was saying to me, people came out, big crowd, they came out for the hanging. They thought that was going to be the end of it. Well, Gary Williams scored the goal that kept him in the division, and that was it then. That sort of ride to the moon, as we talk about, started probably the following season.
Yeah, he took them a number of Wembley appearances, and you both played at Wembley under Johnny.
Yeah, we had... there was one time it was our second home. When you look back in it now, 1990, we played there, you know, on consecutive Saturdays. And then 1991, we did the same thing.
Same thing again.
You know, it's just not the sort of thing you think about these days.
Park South.
I believe you hitchhiked there once as well, Eddie.
Yeah, that's quite a funny story in itself regarding Johnny King, actually. I'd left the club around about the February and went to Chester. And the boys actually carried on doing so much better without me and got to the playoffs again. We'd missed out the previous season to Notts County, which was when I played. But this season, they got to the playoff final and was playing Bolton. And it was on a Sunday. And I'd started my welding business by then. I was due to go into work on the Sunday morning. But I'd been out on the Saturday night before, and I kept thinking about that game. And if I'd only stayed, I'd have been with them, blah, blah, blah. And I got up that morning and I thought, sod this, I'm not going to work. I'm going to get down to it. I'm going to watch them. I'm going to see it from the other side. I've been there the season before. I'm going to see it from a fan's point of view. But I had no ticket. I hadn't really thought about it. So I thought, to be honest, I don't know whether I woke up Sunday morning still a little bit drunk from the night before. Because I put an old Sammy shirt on, a pair of jeans, denim jacket, drove to Sandy Way Services, and I thought, I can't drive any further. I'd better thumb a lift. Parked my car, started thumbing a lift. And these guys from Rock Ferry picked me up, got me in the back of the car, filled me with loads of beer. It was great, honest. Got all the way down to Wembley, had a few more drinks down there. But I had to leave them then and try and make my way into the ground. And I seen the coach coming in. I thought, were you on the bus then, Chris? He was on the bus. And the coach is going into the ground, all the lads are waving to the supporters. And I think it was Ian Muir went, oh my God, there's the bish. And he'd come off. He was injured at the time. He wasn't playing in that particular game, Murray. So I said, I'm going to get in. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll get you to carry the kit in. So I think I carried the kit in with the kit man. And that was my way into Wembley. Walked on the pitch with the lads. They're all waving to to all the supporters and stuff with all the blazers and the flowers and the lapels and stuff. I just had a denim jacket on a pair of jeans. Looked like Shaking Stevens. And then I got... The gaffer came over to me. Johnny came over and said, hello, Bishop, what are you doing here? I said, oh, I had to come down and watch. He said, the only thing is, gaffer, I've got no ticket. Any chance of a ticket? I've got nowhere to sit. And typical of King, he just went, don't worry about it, sit with us. I said, sit with you? He said, just sit with us on the bench. And that's what I've done. I was playing for Chester at the time, but I sat on the bench with all the subs and the gaffer and my denims and watched the final. Rick Sissy scored that magical goal.
Yeah. We'll talk more about that goal later in the show. But they were magical times to support Tranmere, weren't they? And they had that Mercantile credit run as well.
Yeah, the Mercantile credit one, I'm not sure the exact year was that, 88, 89?
88 it was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the first trip to Wembley where they had this sort of mini competition. It was only sort of 20 minutes each way, something like that. But they done fantastically well. I just signed for the club then. I think we beat Newcastle and we beat...
Was it Wimbledon?
Wimbledon when David Martindale scored that goal. Yeah, so. But we weren't expecting to get through to the next day. And that to get through, he thought we'd just have a couple of games and come home. But we qualified to the later stages, which took place on the Sunday, the following day. And I remember my mum and dad had gone down there to watch it, like most people, expecting us not to qualify. And they had nowhere to stay, so they slept in the car. They slept in the car that night to watch the games on the following day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even we as players, they had to book an extra night. Yeah. You know, we weren't expecting to stay that long.
Yeah.
I think we got beat by Nottingham Forest on penalties, didn't we?
That's right, yeah.
But it was
a
strange sort of competition, that. It was just like, it was quite random. It was like, right, from one point in the season, the next 10 games is going to be a mini league. And whoever's first and second in each of the divisions went through to this Mercantile Credit. And that was the start of our love of Wembley then.
Yeah.
And, we had a cracking time. And the football he played, to be fair, I didn't play because I was injured. But, some of the football was fantastic.
Well, we had the players. We had some fantastic ball players, really technically gifted players. They're like, say, Jimmy Harvey, Morrissey, Ian Miona, Martindale. And Wembley just suited them down to the ground. And it was no surprise to see the football we did play. And that followed us on for the following years, that style of football.
And players who later came, your Pat Nevin signed as well, and Aldo's as well. Yeah. He did know how to spot a player, didn't he, Johnny King, Ray?
Well, I think... He would have told you the tale of when he jumped on a plane with Bill Bothwell and they went over to Spain to watch John Aldridge play. And I think John knew all about him anyway from his South Liverpool days and apparently tried to sign him then, And it was a big signing, And then once he'd signed John Aldridge, it was a great signing. Again, Pat Nevin, Gary Stevens, Neil McNabb, I thought, was a great player as well. You know, players like that coming into and mixing in with the squad what was already there, just showed, the characters and the player type of players Johnny King wanted at the football club. And it proved, every decision what he made and every player he signed was a great decision.
Well, we'll be back with some more on Trip to the Moon, our Johnny King special here on City Talk 105.9 with Ray Mathias, Eddie Bishop and Chris Malkin shortly. But after the break, we'll be speaking to John Aldridge and Ian Muir, Tranmere's two greatest ever goal scorers.
City Talk 105.9, celebrating Johnny King's magical Tranmere career.
Welcome back to City Talk 105.9 with me, Matthew Jones, where we're paying tribute to Tranmere's greatest ever manager, Johnny King. We'll be hearing some more shortly from our studio guests, Chris Malkin, Ray Mathias and Eddie Bishop. But firstly, let's hear from two of Tranmere's greatest ever goal scorers. Ian Muir and John Aldridge both played under Johnny King, with Muir flourishing under the Rovers boss after being signed by Frank Worthington, while Aldo signed for the club in 1991 for a bargain fee of £250,000 and arguably went on to become the club's best ever striker, as well as managing the club and leading them himself to Wembley. John, Ian, how are you both doing?
Well, I'm doing okay. I'm sure John is as well. He's always on the TV and everything, what else, so we're doing okay.
Yeah, man, myself, yeah, it's great to listen to Muri. I haven't seen him for a few years now, but everything's good, thank you.
Talking about Johnny King, what was he like to play under as a manager?
Well, he had his certain sayings and everything. He didn't really shout and bawl in the dressing room. We all sort of sorted that out together. But I know when Johnny Aldridge took over, he was a completely different character. But I know we're playing with John, how determined and he wanted to win every game possible. So, John King was... certain breed of his own, but he's a successful manager.
Yeah, he was. You spot on, Muri. He's very cool, calm, and collected. Like when I was mad, I would rant and rave sometimes. I'd go off me trolley, but that wasn't John's way, wasn't it? I mean, he's a gentleman, you know, in the dressing room and outside the dressing room. A lovely man, and it was great to play for him. It really was. He picked up some smashing signings. You know, he nearly got us into the Premiership, which we should have done on more than one occasion. We just fell at the last hurdle. You know, and that would have been magnificent for the club to have gone on to possibly greater things and get the money, you know, that the Premiership was giving you in them days, but it just wasn't to be.
Well, Aldo, you were obviously playing in Spain when he signed you. What was he first like when you first spoke to him about joining Tranmere?
Yeah, just very polite, very nice. And, you know, I spoke to Johnny and Mr. Johnson, the chairman. And, you know, they sold the club to me where they wanted to go, the signings they were looking to get. And it nearly happened. You know, regenerated the stadium. You know, it was a fantastic stadium now it is for a team in the lower leagues. So, the plans nearly came to fruition. Again, we just fell at the last hurdle on three occasions.
And, of course, you managed to score a number of goals under him, including 40 in your first season.
Yeah, that's great. No, we had some good players. We had a good squad of players going forward. Defensively, you know, perhaps we could have been a bit better, you know, but that's the way John would like to play, you know, with an attacking philosophy, you know, and, you know, a little bit like Liverpool now, we'd have two wingers, you know, two really good wingers, like Johnny Morrissey was brilliant, Moggsy, you know, and Pat Nevin, you know, I mean, myself, Malky, and Muri, you know, you got great deliveries into the box and it was up to us to put them away.
Ian, obviously you had your most successful period as a player with the club as well. What was it about him that got you scoring so many goals?
I don't know. I think it was just the way we played. He liked the team to play football, and we had plenty of players in the team that liked to play football anyway. You know, they were good, skillful players, and we gelled together as a team. And then with you know, John Aldridge coming along and scoring so many goals after me, as well as me, you know, it was a massive boost to the team. John couldn't stop scoring. He wasn't far behind my record, and I told him that. He said he'd have played another season if he didn't know he was quite close by. Do you remember me telling you that?
I did, Muri, yeah. Too right, mate. Yeah. My legs couldn't take any more, mate. I was nearly 40 years of age, pal, but... No, you were a great goal scorer, Muri. We didn't actually play that many games together. I think John preferred Malky alongside Muri or myself because of the work ethic he put in. I don't know. Or he thought we were too like scoring goals. And it was a shame, really, because whenever we did play alongside each other, we done really well.
Well, yeah, at times, or arguably, you were the two best strikers and most successful strikers outside the Premier League.
Well, like John said, when we did play together, it was either John scored or I scored. So there's always a goal between us. I remember coming on against, I think it was Sunderland, and they'd hardly come out of the tunnel. I think the gaffer was still inside the dressing room. And I'd just come on. John nodded a great header down to me, and I put it away. And just saying that, you know, with all the players I played with, John Aldridge would probably be the best player I played with when heading a football. You know, it was just different class in there, and you know, something special.
Well, John, I've been searching through the archives of some footage of some audio of what Johnny King had to say about you, and this is what he described you as in about 1995.
He's a goal machine, and I'm very, very proud to have brought the boy here, because he's always been, you know the stories. We don't want to go through them again. He's one of the greatest strikers in the world, you know my opinion of that. And he just rolls on and on and on, and he'll keep scoring goals, that man.
One of the greatest strikers in the world.
That's a nice accolade, isn't it? You know, it really is. Muri will tell you, any goal scorer will tell you, it's a gift that's within you. You know, you find yourself in positions and you don't know how you get there. It's just natural ability. You know, it's all about the composure then to put it away, which, thankfully, I had most of the times. But yeah, he was smashing man to work for. He really was. I got some stick off the lads really when he started to call me the gunslinger and some of the other names he called me. John, the lads took the proverbial out of me, but it was well worth it.
We found that he also actually called you Peter Pan, if you listen to this audio.
Nice to see Aldridge looking sharp there, you know, and you've heard me say before about Aldridge, so many sayings, and now, of course, I want him to turn into Peter Pan. You know, I think Peter Pan, if he got the costume on, and, you know, he's a boy again, and he has that you know, ear-to-ear smile, and he'll only get that by keeping away from injury, and if he keeps away from injury, he will play for his country.
Yeah, Peter Pan. I've heard that. I've gone to the Christmas party dressed as Peter Pan, but I haven't heard that one before.
He had a fantastic way with words, didn't he, when he was manager?
Yeah, he did. You know, I think a lot of that came from, you know, the time he spent with Bill Shankly. When Shanks left Liverpool, he spent a bit of time with Johnny over at Tranmere, you know, watching him train and helping Johnny along. And, you know, and I think that's where Johnny got, you know, a lot of his sayings from.
Have you both got great stories of what Johnny was like in the dressing room or his motivating team talks and the like?
There's one time I got called in, which wasn't anything to do with that in the game. Jim Steele had been going through a bit of a bad patch. And he called me into the office because I was always taking the mickey and whatever. And he told me to leave it a little bit easy on Jim, stop giving him some stick for missing chances or whatever in training, whatever. He says his confidence is low. So I just said, yeah, no problem, Gaffer. Everything will be okay. So as soon as we got out on the training pitch and started shooting, I was straight on his back and he just gave me a sly look and as if to tell me, I'll have you, whatever. But that's what he did to me.
And what about yourself, John?
No, as I said before, he was, even in defeat at half time, he was very placid. He was looking at the game in general and how he could change it. And that, like Miori said, he wouldn't, you know, shout and bawl or throw tea or whatever I used to do. And you know, he just went it in a calm manner, you know, and tried to, you know, technically get the message over to us.
Well, Ian, how great an honour is it to have for Johnny to have a statue being moulded in his honour?
Well, it's a great thing of respect for what he achieved at the club over the 10 years that he was there or I was under him. It's a great honour for him, and you know, I think it's something special.
And Johnny's already got a stand named after him at Prenton Park, so it just shows how highly the fans regard him.
And quite rightly so. He totally deserves, you know, let's not forget he had two spells at the club. His first one was very successful. Second one was excellent. You know, we nearly got to a cup final. You know, got beat on penalties at Villa as well, as nearly getting to the Premiership. And he's a lovely man, you know, so, you know, totally, you know, deserves it. Let's just hope that Tranmere this season, when it's getting put up, can stay up. It's very important for the club. You know, since Johnny was there, getting us up through the leagues and keeping us up there, you know, it'd be a shame if the lads got relegated last year. So it would be a nice time to maybe use that as an earmark to try and keep the club afloat.
Well, plenty of his players are going to be going to this dinner at Hume Hall in Port Sunlight. Ian, I believe you're one of them. How much are you looking forward to it?
Well, yeah, it's going to be great. Quite a few of the players are going to be there. The more the merrier, really. So hopefully as many players can get there as possible, past and present. But it'd be really great to see the old players and, you know, have a couple of drinks and reminisce on old times.
And as we've already seen, when those old players do get back together, they don't make a bad five-a-side team.
Oh, we was all right. We played a lot of five-a-sides. And, yeah, I think that's what comes from it, really. Possession football and it goes a long way to when you get out onto the pitch. And we always played some nice football, entertained the crowds and scored quite a few goals.
Well, to Ian first and then John, where does he rank in the managers you played under?
Well, he's got to be one of the top managers we've played under because of the success he had without bawling and shouting and everything was done properly. He even brought in the nice suits. So when we went to the football grounds, we'd turn up looking smart and everything. He really enjoyed that. We even had to wear them when going abroad on a holiday. So, you know, a lot of his mannerisms and whatever are well known. And I'm sure it's going to be a really great night when we all get together.
And John?
Yeah, you know, I was delighted to play for Johnny. I've been fortunate to have some fantastic managers over the years, you know, all of them being very, very good in their own way. You know, and I'm just pleased that Johnny is getting this prestige. Thoroughly deserves it, as I said before. You know, he is Mr. Tranmere, isn't he? And a gentleman at that as well. And, you know, it was great to play for Johnny and get to know him. You know, when I was playing and even when I was managing, we used to have many a chat. And he's a lovely man, lovely man.
Thank you very much to both of you for joining me. This is the Johnny King special on City Talk 105.9. And it's great to have two of Tranmere's greatest ever goal scorers talking about him so highly.
Cheers. All the best.
Yes, thanks very much.
And that was former Tranmere strikers John Aldridge and Ian Muir talking about Rovers' greatest ever manager, Johnny King, ahead of a tribute dinner to him at Hume Hall in Port Sunlight this week. Well, don't go anywhere, because in part three of the show, we'll be once again hearing from Ray Mathias, Eddie Bishop and Chris Malkin about Johnny King.
City Talk 105.9, celebrating Johnny King's magical Tranmere career. Our City Talk 105.9 special.
Welcome back to A Trip to the Moon, our Johnny King special here on City Talk 105.9. I'm Matthew Jones and I'm joined in the studio here by Eddie Bishop, Chris Malkin and Ray Mathias. We're talking, of course, about Johnny King because this week he has a dinner in his honour at Hume Hall in Port Sunlight, organised by the Tranmere Rovers Supporters Trust and Former Players Foundation. Now, Chris, we're going to come to you this because I wonder if you remember this moment.
Clear shooting opportunity for Malkin. Goal! And Tranmere Rovers are ahead in the third division playoff final at Wembley, and the end away to my right has gone absolutely berserk. The Rovers fans are beside themselves with joy. Johnny Morrissey grabs his shirt and he can't believe it. He's almost in tears there and he shakes two fists towards the bench.
Your favourite moment as a player?
Oh, most definitely. That's funny there, Johnny Morrissey. I think he almost fainted at that point. It was so hot that day. No, that was brilliant. You know, and looking back on that, it also shows how clever Johnny King was as well. You know, I hadn't played that many games that season. And the previous season, I'd felt a bit nervous in the games at Wembley. So he kept me on the bench that game. And I was, you know, he knew that I was chomping at the bit. And he knew that I was also an impact player. So I think starting me on the bench was actually probably a masterstroke, really. As it turned out, Jim Steele came off after about 20, 25 minutes with his knee. He got badly injured. So I went on fresh, no nerves, and just ready to make an impact. And that was, you know, I often came on a sub and did well. And anyway, that game, flipping, I scored a goal that was disallowed, hit the crossbar, got yellow carded. I thought, flipping heck, it's not going to go right for me. But in the end, it was that, you know, that defining moment. And sometimes that's what it is, you know, just one moment in time where it all comes together for you.
And one of the most famous photos probably in the history of Tranmere is yourself and Johnny holding the trophy on the pitch at Wembley at full time.
Oh, yeah, that is brilliant. I mean, he was, you know, such a proud guy. You know, he was so proud of us and he was so proud of the players. But, you know, that rubbed off on us. We were proud of him. If you speak to any of the boys now, you know, they've all got a real soft spot for him. You know, he really looked after us.
I think if you go back to that situation again, you know, we had a long discussions about the Bolton game, you know, at Wembley and that, and Johnny Morrissey always used to play in the right-hand side. And on this game, I'd seen Bolton playing at Bury. You know, the lads were playing in another game. I think they was finishing the league off and Bolton were playing. And Phil Brown was actually playing for Bolton. And he had a fella called Tony playing up front. And Brown used to get down the right-hand side and whip these balls in. And they get a lot of goals. And most of their goals came from that, you know, situation. So on the day, you know, we had chatted with John about it, discussed, you know, the team report, and Ronnie Moore, Kenny Jones. We used to get Warwick Rimmer involved as well, Warwick, you know, and all that, and we'd discuss it and go through it. And John decided, you know, off his own back, you know, then saying that we'd play Muggsy on the left then, stop Brownie getting forward, and it worked to an absolute treat, you know. And I think Muggsy laid the ball off for Chris, yeah,
the goal came down the left-hand side,
and you know, and Muggsy set it up for Chris to finish. And but you know, that tactically is something which, you know, John used to include all his staff regarding, you know, team selection. And I guess he was going to tell the tale, I think, about the dogs, you know, his dogs. I mean, you could go on about it. John was religiously, he had one dog at one time and then two dogs. But every morning before he went training, he put the wellies on if it was raining. Same pair of wellies, superstition, what I said before. Get out, take the dogs for the walks, round the same trees, same area, and then bring them back. And Chrissy always says the tale about, you know, throwing a stick.
Yeah.
If he had a team selection problem, he'd have all the names on the stick, and he'd shout to his dog, go and pick the team, the last one, you know. He used to come in and tell us these little tales, which were so funny. And
Johnny Morrissey was funny. His dog was called Prince. And Moggsy was really funny. He was like, he's actually thrown my stick away. You know, when it came to team selection, you say he's thrown my stick away. He's got four Chris Malkins and got no John Morrisseys.
There are so many great tales, and they just don't really make managers like that anymore, do they?
No. When you asked the question before, what were the team talks like? I remember coming from non-league football and coming into the professional setup. How sort of his team talks were, he'd always have a meeting, probably the day before the game, and then, you know, the day of the game as well. And he used to have these flip charts. Remember the flip charts he used to have? With about six pieces of paper on, he'd flip it over, and he used to go through every single player of the opposition, how he thought they were going to play. I'd never seen that before. Quite intense into what he was doing, but always done it in a jokey manner as well. But and when Ray was saying about superstition as well, at the end of his team talk, when we were ready to go out, he'd got us all fired up, ready for the game. I think this was one of his superstitions. He used to give you such a whack on the back of the neck. Not before you went out, you'll be lining up going out, all the best, I'd all shaking hands with you, all the best. As you're going out, he'd stand by the door, as you went past, he'd whack you on the back of the neck. And whether that was just to give you a little bit of a wake-up call, I don't know, but he did it every single game. Go out your neck, Red Rowan. It was great.
I remember on a Friday, John would do all his charts, you know, what Eddie's on about there, you know, for Saturday. And he'd stand there in his office, you know, and he'd shout Mosey, he'd shout Ronnie Moore down, he'd shout me down, he'd shout Kenny Jones down, and he'd be going through writing all these things. And I used to do all the match reports then, you know, for him and that, and he'd be going through the team and then, what do you think? And he'd go discuss everything, really, you know, but it was so funny, what he went through, how, you know, it was absolutely... Every little thing what he could get of information from the player he was playing in certain way, he would do that and try and get it out of you, you know, and that. But that's the way he was. He was so. And I remember during the week, he'd start maybe we were playing, say for instance, Bolton were playing Bolton in that final, you know, at Wembley. He'd get you in on the Monday and he'd go, "What would your team be, Mathigo?" Then Morsey, what would your team be on there? And everyone, and then Warwick, even the tea lady went down there at one time. It was amazing, you know, and Ted, the kit man. But, you know, this is the way he was. He involved everybody right up to, you know, even the lady who did all the food for the lads. He involved her in everything, you know, as much as he could. But that's the type of person he was, you know. And the lads have said before, you know, never, ever did I see Johnny King without a smile on his face. But I used to see him quite early in the morning, coming out of his house. He'd, as you know, again singing or whatever, taking his dog for a walk, coming back singing. And then late at night, he'd do exactly the same again, and we'd be shouting across the road. I'm sure the neighbours used to go mad at one time. You know, the voices, you know, getting back either from a game at late midnight and having a little chat across the road from each other. And this the way he was, though. He always wanted to talk about football.
Mathigo, was that his nickname for you?
That was my nickname, yes. And he always used to call me it. And, you know, for some reason, I got labelled with that. And the lads, you know, when I was a player, the lads used to give me that anyway, you know. So, but it especially.
I think you had like a bit of a Spanish feel about the way you played, was it?
It must have been, yeah, I must have thought it was a Spanish.
But Fridays were always interesting days. Because, you know, we'd be waiting there in the gym. And we never really start at half ten, like, you know, like we were supposed to. We'd always be hanging around, you know, waiting for selection. But the gaffer would never, he'd always tell you if you were dropped. You know what I mean? He'd never just leave it to the last minute. He'd always tell you sort of day before. So he'd be waiting there in the gym. And it'd be Morsey, he'd come down and he'd pop his head round and he'd say, "Sean, gaffer wants to see you." And it was a walk, this when we were at Valley Road, and it was like a 100-yard walk down to his office, and you just knew it was the walk of death. You know what I mean? You knew what was going to come. As soon as Morsey said, "Sean, gaffer wants you," you know, he'd walk down, and then Sean would come back in, you know, dropped again, you know, giving it all sorts. And then Morsey'd go, "Moggsy, gaffer wants you." And Moggsy would be the exact same. "Bloody hell, not again, it's always my fault." And then he'd say, "Chrissy, gaffer wants you." And I'd come back. And he said, "Chris, you got another chance. You got another chance. Prince got your stick. You found your stick for selection." But, you know, even if he did drop you, he would say to you, like, you know, you'd come out, you'd feel, you wouldn't feel gutted. You would a little bit because, you know, you weren't playing. But he'd sort of inspire you, say, "Look, you know, I'm going to give you a breather. But when you do come on, which you will come on, you know, last 20, 30 minutes, I want you to make an impact. And, you know, I know you can score goals for me. I just want you to have a look at it from the sidelines for a little bit and come on. But when you do come on, give me everything." So you'd walk out and, you know, your shoulders would be back, and it'd definitely soften the blow for you.
Yeah, I remember, he's writing what he was saying about when you were left out of time. I had my first year at times on the bench, and he would tell you before, and as he was saying, he'd call you down and tell you. But there's one particular time, I'd had a decent run in the team, and I thought I was doing okay. And I hadn't had the call down to say I wasn't playing. And he picked the team one day, and I wasn't in it. I was picked on the bench, and I thought, "He hasn't told me. Why hasn't he told me? He normally tells you." So I was a little bit gutted by that. And I felt all the eyes look at me when the team was picked, and that, "Oh, he hasn't been told." So anyway, we got on with the game, and I forgot about it. But Monday morning, it still bothered me a little bit. I was acting a little bit, you know, a bit spoilt, I suppose. So I knocked on his door, wanted to see him. So Gaffer, he said, "Come here, son, what's the matter?" I said, "Just about the team on Saturday, you know, I just felt a little bit embarrassed. You never told me before, and I was being left out. You normally do that." He said, "Ah, no, yeah. You know what, son, next time, what I'll do, I'll call you down to the office next time. Definitely do it. Sit you in the corner, I'll give you an ice cream, bag of sweets. Anything you want, but you still won't be playing." And it was his way of sort of saying, "You know, man up a little bit, will you?" You know, and I walked out thinking, "Yeah, fair enough, okay, you don't have to tell me." It's just that what we'd been used to, you know.
Well, that seems like the perfect time to finish it for today. That is the end of part one of our Johnny King tribute, A Trip to the Moon, on City Talk 105.9. But don't forget to tune back in tomorrow, when we're going to have more from Eddie Bishop, Ray Mathias and Chris Malkin, as well as Eric Nixon on the phone.
City Talk 105.9, celebrating Johnny King's magical Tranmere career.